Thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres baseball. I don't know. I'm slightly nervous we won't have anything to root for or, you know, cheer on, Nick, here soon.
Yeah, it's a tough time out here for Padres podcasting and content making, but we're going to try our best. We're also joined by Dallas McLaughlin.
Oh, hey, go baseball.
Baseball.
Remember baseball?
I do, I think.
Does anybody remember laughter?
Do we remember joy?
Yeah, I don't know how you want to do this. Sorry, Nick, I was going to.
Well, Dallas, I heard you got some stories coming out soon. Do you want to talk about
that? Yeah, man, some stories. I got some stories. Yeah, I'll get that out of the way first before I ruin my reputation on Padres Twitter with what I was going to say. I recorded some stories, Nick. Over the past decade, I've recorded a bunch of stories live at the Whistle Stop Bar in San Diego as part of So Say We All's Vamp Night. And during the pandemic, I was like, man, I got all these stories, and they're just sitting here. And I like them. They're funny, I think. They're sweet and sad. And some of them are truths and a lot of lies and a lot of alcohol involved in all the stories. Junior say I was deaf. And I think they were fun. So anyway, I talked
oddly specific out of all the stories.
there's a few mentions of Junior say I was deaf in one of the stories. But yeah, man, they're a lot of fun. And there's a story about I tell about doorbell ditching in our Nick. Nick was a part of that doorbell ditching crew. And
I was going to ask if there's a track listing that I get before this comes out, so I know exactly when I'm going to appear in some of these.
I changed most of the names throughout all the stories, except for one glaring one, but that's okay. And then, most of the stories are from my life. And Junior Sales life. Only Junior Sales life. I have one mention of Ronnie Lott.
No. Oh, good. Well, my favorite.
So yeah, it comes out on all streaming formats January 28th. It's called Rough Drafts: Stories to Drink To. I encourage people to enjoy different beverages while they're listening to different stories. And it'll be fun. I don't know. It's the first of three albums I'll be putting out in 6 months. So it'll be this one, another one in 2 months, and then another one 2 months after that. And at the end of that, I'll have a whole hour of new material that I'll be doing a show with around that time. So it's all one big, huge thing. Cool. But I'm excited, man. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done. I'll be honest. Like, out of all the stupid shit I've done in my life, this is probably one of my favorite things ever. And I'm glad that people are going to hear them.
Cool. January 28th. We're excited. Yeah, we'll be tweeting about it on the Kept Faith Twitter account. And
thanks, Nick.
If we ever do a baseball podcast again, we could talk about it again, you know, when it comes out.
What's baseball?
Yeah, well, let's talk about it with a fellow Padres podcaster. We're also joined by John Gennaro from Padres Hot Tub. What's up?
Hey guys, it's been a little too long since I've been on this podcast. I did want to give a quick shout out for Dallas for apparently waking up Nick Cannabis so that he could dunk on himself continuously for like a week straight to the point that a national audience became aware of it.
Yes. The timing is impeccable. We have a way of doing that, don't we?
You're welcome, John. It was, you know, it's so easy to make him look stupid that I feel like everyone should just be doing it. I don't know why I'm the only one right now.
You know, back when I ran Bolts in the Blue,
name drop.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Avenging Jack Murphy used to write for us, and all he would do was tear apart anything that Canepa wrote. He would just like line for line, just like rip it to shreds. And he didn't stop for any reason other than actually it was two reasons. One, he was like, I'm getting tired of this. And two, he was like, I feel like I'm beating up an old like senile man. And and nothing's changed.
And here's the thing. I've written stuff about him in the past and I kind of feel bad. And then like he'll write something new. Like when that article came out where he compared the Chargers leaving to 9/11. And I'm like, all right, see, now this is, you can't say this stuff. I don't care how old you are. Like, you can't say this stuff and get away with it. So I never feel bad, hopefully making him feel bad, which I'm sure I don't. He's old and sure he's like, oh, these kids don't know. One time I was doing whippets with Mickey Mantle and Yogi Berra was getting head in the corner and they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Wait, have you or anyone here ever actually met Nick Canepa in person?
No, never.
I have not. I've always wanted to interview him, but I don't know how I could do that.
I'm not allowed in. I'm usually not allowed in the handicap section, so I have not met.
So I tried for a number of years to see if he would agree to let me like interview him on a podcast or even a writing form or whatever. And it was just like, no. And the only interaction I've ever had with him in person was, I think it was the one time I was like in the press box at Qualcomm Stadium for a Charger game, and it was halftime. And I walked out to try and find like the smoking section to see if I could bum a cigarette off someone, because I didn't bring them with me in the stadium because I was like, they're not going to let me do that. And I found the smoking section. The only person in it was Nick Canepa, and he had lit up a cigarette and he was smoking a cigarette. And I was like, hi, Nick, I'm John Gennaro. Is there any chance I could bum a cigarette off you? And he took a big drag, looked me dead in the eye and said, absolutely fucking not. And I just walked away. I was like, all right, that's all I need for today. It was like, it literally was a joy. It was a joy to deal with that.
Wow. I couldn't imagine it going anything but exactly like that.
Yeah. I fantasize about interviewing him and like opening with a question about the PSA crash that he covered. That'd be like my way to get him off guard. I think about that a lot, but I don't know. I don't think it'll ever happen for me. You know,
I think that like you have this Nick unhealthy obsession with Hacksaw. And I think that everybody knows that.
Well, we text.
Yeah.
So it's,
and it's fine. I think that's a healthy obsession. I think with Canepa, it's like, we would get him on and he would just go off on some weird tangent and we would all be so miserable and sad that he's actually on the podcast, and we'd hate whatever he would say. It would just not go like Hacksaw. When Hacksaw's on the podcast, you can ask a question and then you talk again in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And we all just sit back and enjoy it. It's very fun to listen to. Canepa will go off and tell some stupid story about like the Model T or some bullshit. It is a mess.
Well, he's interesting because I can't like place his voice in my head because he doesn't do a lot of audio. He doesn't do radio often, and I don't really even think I know what his voice sounds like that much. You've met him, John, so it's different. But what exactly do you guys hate about his writing? Because I don't. Is it the position that he's in of power, that he's like the longest tenured columnist in this town, or do you actually dislike the way he writes?
It's for me, it's a little bit of both. It's like, I don't know. Imagine if like Charlie Chaplin were alive today, and for some reason he was like the senator of Arizona. Like, I would hate everything about that. Like, it's a poor fit. He's obviously not fit to be senator, and like, and he's not funny anymore. Like, that ship has long sailed. So like, it's like he's bad. He's bad at his job. He doesn't deserve the position that he's in. And like, literally, this is what I meant by like what Avenging Jack Murphy used to do. Like, you can go line by line. And I don't mean skipping lines. I mean, reading every single sentence that he writes, and every single one of them is bad. And it's like, there's nothing redeeming about his writing anymore. Like, not a single thing about his writing has a quality of like professionalism or analysis to it. And so like with Hacksaw, it and like, I hate that man, but at the very least, Hacksaw can talk. Like Dallas just said, like, you could just like tee up a question and just watch him go.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's kind of fun to watch him go. Like, it's not fun to watch Nick Canepa do anything because he can't do anything.
Well, I would say like the thing about Canepa, I remember being a kid and reading Canepa in the newspaper, and like Canepa to me is like any kind of, I mean, I'm not going to take any credit away from him. I think the way he wrote, was trailblazing to some degree for a sports columnist. That Says Me thing had its time. Like, it was like this breakdown of stuff that was interesting to read. They were takes. It was takes. And nobody else was like doing takes when I was 9 years old or 10 years old reading the paper. It was like funny to see this guy doing takes. Just like, you know, Rick Riley or even Bill Simmons, like seeing these people who kind of changed the format of sports writing. And I put him in that category. But the thing about Rick Riley is like, he held on too long and then kind of imploded on himself. Bill Simmons was smart and just went into podcasting, you know, and so he didn't have to see how bad his writing can, you know, got instead of progressing.
Devolve into. Yeah.
Canepa has done the opposite, where he's literally gotten worse. He took his own style and somehow has gotten worse, much like what Rick Riley did, where it's like he couldn't let it go and he refused to learn anything new or be a part of anything new. And I just get infuriated when, like, he says shit like the 9/11 thing. Like, that's just outright stupid. And it's like, if it's a take, that's just such a horrible, lazy take, and it's cruel. And then, like, this whole thing with he gets a vote. Like, that man gets to vote on a sports Hall of Fame that he does not care about. Like, reading his articles, he does that's like literally if you gave me a vote for the soccer Hall of Fame, it is the same thing. Like, I don't care about football. I casually watch it and enjoy it. I have no idea what's happening with the sport, but I get to vote on who should be remembered in the Hall of Fame for the Premier League. Like, it's the same thing. It's just not fair. It's not fair. Yeah.
And like, I think what really sticks in my craw about Canepa is, like, that was my dream job growing up. Like, I wanted to be the local sports columnist. And so, like, I just want the local sports columnist to be good so that I would have, like, a legitimate reason for it to not be, like, a dream accomplished. I could be like, oh, that guy's better than me. There's no way I was ever going to do that. But, like, I'm a better writer than he is. Like, at this point, I am clearly a better, like, columnist. I could be a better columnist than he is right now. And that's, like, I'm not even being... That's not even bragging. Like, a child is a better columnist than him at this point.
For the listener, John is wearing a Bandwagon Beach sweatshirt.
Let's cover
right
that.
Now
up. Like, that's
follow him on Substack.
I haven't written anything in a year, but I want someone in that position to be good, so I could be like, oh, at least, like,
I know what you
at
mean.
Least like yeah, a beat yeah. out. And the fact that he's so bad, and like, AC can be really bad sometimes, especially when it comes to covering baseball, that I'm just like, can we please have some people that, like, I can look up to?
Well, I agree. With Canepa, to me, I always kind of fantasized about having the old columnist who stuck around for so my entire life, who gets more grumpy the older he gets, and that's sort of charming to me. That didn't happen with this guy, because I don't like his anger. Like, it doesn't land for me. It's not like, it's not something that I find to be, oh, well, that's Canepa. He's such an old, you know, grouch, but I love him anyways. I don't have that relationship with his writing. And
also,
and that,
yeah. his anger now is entirely like, he's pissed off that the Chargers left, right?
That he has nothing to write about.
And he thinks his writing, through his writing, it feels like he's the victim, because his NFL coverage doesn't land as hard anymore because they're not here. And it's like, well, you could just write about San Diego sports because there's other things going on, but he just can't, he doesn't have the capability of doing that. And I think that's the frustrating thing with him.
The anger in his writing is the fact that everything has passed him by and he doesn't know how to deal with it. Like, it's not just the Chargers leaving. It's that every aspect of what he has done his whole life is now different, and he can't process that and refuses to try. Yeah. And that is all. If you go into his writing with that mentality, it all makes sense. Like, he's just angry and he doesn't know how to do it. Like, he's not a great writer anymore. He doesn't know how to accomplish it. And honestly, like, he's old. Like, he's an old man. I mean, I'm 27 and I know... But, like, my brain is slipping. Like, I'm not nearly as quick or as fast as I used to be. Not at all. And it's like, I'm so much younger than him. It's like, you fall off the wagon sometimes. It's okay. But to give him a platform and keep allowing him to vote, and it's just like, it's irresponsible. It really
is. A lot of the guys in his age group that are, you know, have these long careers in media, eventually they stop writing and just have, like, a podcast or a radio show, right? I mean, that's what, like, Tony Kornheiser did. Yeah.
Retire and sit on a patio and smoke your cigars. Like, what?
Yeah, they do one of two things. Either they graduate onto something else, like a podcast, or they just, like, eventually get fired from their job in a very graceful way. And then they, you know, probably start up a Substack or something like that. But, like, this is exactly my point. I wanted to know how old he was when Dallas was talking about how old he was. So I Googled Nick Canepa age. And the first thing that came up was a story from the Union Tribune from a little over... like 3 or 4 months ago, titled Nick Canepa Celebrates 50 Years as San Diego Sports Writer. Like, they're going to build a statue of this man in the Union Tribune offices at some point. And, like, he hasn't been good in 30 years.
I mean, 50 years, that means he's got to be like 70 something, right?
There's no way he got a job being less than 20.
Yeah, it's got to be 70 or
more than 20. Yeah.
And when the Wave FC premieres this year or whatever, you know, the women's soccer team comes out, he's going to have to make the snide comment like, this isn't going to replace the Chargers. And that's the whole thing. It's like, no matter what happens to San Diego after the Chargers left, it will never fill that hole for him. And I just don't. Should that person, should somebody with that worldview be writing from a place of that, like, prestige? You know, I don't think that's
no, right. They
shouldn't. But anyways,
short answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're welcome for me derailing your podcast.
No, that's we were going to talk about.
That was the talk of the town. Yeah.
I know it was. That was amazing that he got caught with that.
What was funny, though, is humorously, the Barstool Sports article covering that was also really poorly written.
I saw it and refused to click on it because I knew what was
I read
there.
Like just, the first just like two every paragraphs can of article. I read the first two paragraphs and I'm like, so many grammatical errors already. I gotta.
Well, we don't have a season that we can look towards right yet, but you know, I was thinking it's the beginning of the year. I'd like to do a segment that's called the State of the Faith. And just kind of, you know, people that have faith in things, they oftentimes refer to it as a journey with obstacles in it. And sometimes there's doubt. I'm just going to go through a list of names in the Padres universe and just see where you guys are with your faith in them. Does that sound fun? We should have a drop here. But
No drops.
Okay.
Drop. Give Sean a little text. We'll have it by tomorrow.
Before we get to the Padres, how about we start with Rob Manfred?
No.
Do you guys have faith in what this guy can
do? Is this pass fail? Is this simple yes, no? Are we going 1 to 10? Like,
no, just where's your faith? It's it's more like describe your faith in this man.
You know, like those people who like fire off a million hot takes and like 99% of them are wrong, but one of them's right, and they feel really good about that one and they bring it up all the time.
Yes.
I hated Rob Manfred from the day I learned his name. Like, when he was like, oh, this guy's eventually going to take over as commissioner. Like, I did a little bit of research, but I was like, this guy is a train wreck. This guy is like, he's going to be terrible. And every time I see him or hear his name, I'm like, I feel so good about how right I was about that. He is awful. Like, without a doubt, I'm pretty sure he's the worst commissioner in the history of baseball. And like, if it wasn't for Gary Bettman, he might be the worst commissioner in the history of all sports. Like, he's so bad. He's so bad.
Yeah, I have to say, like, if you don't have any faith in someone to begin with, he has not given me any reason to have any faith. So I have no faith.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that just saw that guy. Has anybody ever said, oh, this guy's got it under control when it comes to this labor thing? I don't think that anybody who's not associated with the MLB is like, oh, Rob's got it. You know, Rob's got it. It's like, I don't think that exists. Who would ever say that? He looks like an idiot.
Well, again, and what has he done? Like, I feel like they specifically picked a guy who looked like an idiot because they were like, oh, this worked for the NBA. They picked a guy who looks like a space alien and he's great. And so they picked a guy who was like a smaller white Michael Strahan and somehow thought that was going to work. And I mean, there's nothing in his entire career, like even pre being commissioner, that should give you any reason to believe that he's going to lead baseball in a good direction. And like, I'm fully expecting like an entirely lost season and like it being something of like a huge overall blow to like people's enjoyment of baseball and how many baseball fans there actually are in the world, because that's how bad I think he is.
Yeah. Yes. Dallas.
My new album comes out January 28th. January 28th, you can find my new album. Stories about stuff. Rob Manfred is, listen, I mean, Gary Bettman, yep, terrible. But I for me, nobody beats how bad Goodell is. So, like, you know, Goodell, like, people go, oh, he's doing fine. Goodell was handed a golden goose, and he has, in my mind, done everything he can to break that thing down to a nub. But Rob Manfred was like, I feel like Rob Manfred was handed this product that was never really settled and was kind of up in there. A lot of things were up in the air, and he just didn't know what to do and still doesn't. Like, I don't trust him with his labor thing. I think he's all owners, nothing. That's it. Like, very Bud Selig that way. Like, you know, I feel like whatever deal he strikes will be some very short term season or two season deal just to get the season underway. We'll be in this mess again. I don't think he'll ever be out of a mess.
Yeah. It's pretty hard just to watch how this is being covered, because, like, are they meeting tomorrow? Is that what's happening? That's the way this is the information is being doled out. Is like, it's pretty frustrating for people that are, you know, trying to find out if this is going to actually happen. But I don't have any.
I don't hear any, like, I haven't heard any information. It's like, you got to really dig.
Yeah. The last I heard that the owners proposed something late last week, and the players were underwhelmed, I think was the adjective to describe it.
Yeah.
To me, Rob Manfred is the Jace Tingler of managers.
Well, how about we go on to the next one. Where are you guys at faith-wise with AJ Preller, the man who hired Jace Tingler and Bob Melvin? So how's your faith with AJ at this point, John?
I want to let Dallas go first, because Dallas made a face there, so I feel like he's got an answer. He's ready to fire off.
Here's the deal. I have, if we're going on a, what was it? Was there a scale?
Like, are you on?
It was like pass fail, basically. It's like,
Okay. I'm
or how little, much faith do you have?
Are you on fire for AJ, or
not even
AJ?
In the least? I'm in the right smack dab in the middle for AJ. I feel like I don't have a ton of faith that the moves he makes on the player front or managerial front are great moves. I feel like he's just throwing pieces at a puzzle without trying to put it together. However, I get some hope and some faith in the fact that he recognized that he needed to make changes and hire people who actually have experience doing things and bringing in Bob Melvin. And I forget the pitching coach we got from the Indians. I forget his name. Like, crazy well-respected.
Ruben Niebla.
Thank you. I knew it was Ruben. For the life of me, couldn't remember the last name and didn't want to embarrass myself. Those are great, smart hires. I feel like this time, instead of just going, well, I like Jace, I like Adam, or what was it, Andy Green. I can't remember that idiot's name. Just guys that he had like a good feeling about, who had like no experience doing anything. You know, he fires Ballsley and brings in, you know, Old Man River. Like, it's, there's just like, he just makes all these weird decisions, I think, without really like doing any due diligence. But this time it feels like he learned his lesson. We had this team that should have won. They didn't win. And eyes are on him. So, like, I'm in the middle. Like, I feel like he knows this season will be his fault if it fails, and he needed to do something about it. And I feel like he made some good choices. So I'm in the middle.
So you believe in AJ, but you don't really want to go to the church of AJ.
Even know if I believe in AJ. Let's say this.
I spiritually believe in AJ.
I'm going to the church of AJ every Sunday, and I'm really questioning what I'm doing there.
His theology.
Okay.
But I'm still going.
I respect that. John?
Okay, so my take is similar, but I'm going to view it from a different perspective. Although first, Dallas, I have a question for you, because the other day we actually recorded an episode of Padres Hot Tub, Craig Alston and I. And I could not, for the life of me, remember the name of whoever was pitching coach last year. Like, and so I you just called him Old Man River. I referred to him as Father Time because I just couldn't remember his name. Do you remember his name?
Larry Rothschild.
Okay, Larry Rothschild. All right, thank you for that.
That's fantastic.
So my take on AJ Preller is, all right, I'm gonna give you a comp. What was the name of the Pedro Serrano? That was his name. I feel like AJ Preller is Pedro Serrano. Everything he does, literally everything he does, is a home run swing at a fastball. And like, sometimes that gets you Manny Machado and a $300 million deal for a team that you never thought was going to spend that kind of money. And sometimes it gets you Fernando Tatis Jr. for 14 years, which is amazing. And sometimes it gets you Eric Hosmer or Larry Rothschild or Andy Green, because he's like, these are it. And Jace Tingler, because he's like, these are huge moves that could totally shake the foundation of. And so, you know, if you were to compare AJ Preller to a baseball player, he's like a 200 hitter that can have 40 home runs at the end of the year. And like, is there value in that? Sure. Is that a good baseball player that you want in your lineup? Like, maybe. Are you going anywhere if that guy's the best player on your team? Probably not. And so, like, I believe that AJ Preller is doing as much good as he is bad. And I think that this is just who he is going forward. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be the best GM in baseball unless he gets really lucky for a while. And I don't think he's ever going to be the worst GM in baseball, because he usually hits on one of these. And when he does, it's such a big deal that we're like, oh, forget about those four trades he made where he just like pushed, you know, 15 good prospects out the door and got back a whole lot of nothing, because Fernando Tatis Jr. for 14 years, like, it's his big stuff overshadows his mistakes. His big wins overshadow his mistakes.
That's a good take. I agree. I have a question before I put my faith thermometer on Preller. Is who's responsible for the Matt Williams hire? That's what I want to know.
Oh, why are you mad about it?
No, I think that's one of the greatest coaching hires in Padres history. And I didn't even know he was on the team until recently. And so I want to know, is that because of our new manager, Mr. Melvin, or is that an AJ? Because you guys, Matt Williams is our third base coach. Did you know that?
I mean, I'm chalking that up to Bob Melvin.
Okay, like, that's what I want to know. So my faith in AJ is less than 50. I say it like a 40%. If he did hire Matt Williams, he's at the 60%. I do have faith in him, because that's one of the most mature moves I think the Padres have maybe ever made. That's pretty remarkable.
You know, when it comes to rating GMs, you always have to factor in who the third base coach is and whether or not the GM was involved
in
the hiring.
Big deal. Well, I mean, we've had Hoffman for so long at third. So many big calls, you know, a runner coming in from second on, you know, a pop fly out or whatever. It's a big deal, and I just think Matt Williams and that kind of maturity. Wasn't he a manager for years? Did he not win a World Series?
He did not win a World Series.
He didn't.
He was a manager for like a year. I think he managed like the Diamondbacks for a year or two, and he was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
What makes you think that he will be a good third base coach?
His demeanor, his maturity, yet he loves the game. He was one of the few players that I was a fan of, and he was a Giant, if I'm not mistaken, right? Which was hard for me to stomach. I don't know. I think he's a fabulous baseball player. I was going through our coaching staff in preparation for this episode, and I was shocked that he's our third base coach. I just thought that was an amazing, different type of move. If Preller did that, that's why I asked in reference to the GM who made that call, because that's not a Preller, you know, swinging for the fences move. That's like, wow, this guy's available. He would bring so much expertise to somewhat of a young squad still. I don't know. I just think it's a brilliant move, whoever brought him in.
John, sometimes you get a hunch about a third base coach. And you know? That's where Travis is at, and I respect that.
I think it's a big deal. I think there's a lot of look throughout baseball history, there's a lot of third base coaches that made a huge difference to the team.
I will say this. Last year, Nevin with the Yankees was blamed for them losing that series.
That's what I'm saying. There's a lot.
Yes. Made a lot of questionable calls.
And where is he now? Nowhere.
Yeah, he got fired, right?
Yeah.
No, someone recently hired him. Like the Angels or someone recently hired him to be like.
Yeah, we go coach. From the Yankees to the Angels. Exactly.
Oh, Matt Williams had like 45 home runs when the last strike. Baseball strike happened.
Yeah, 94. Tony was going to hit 400. Matt Williams was going to break the home run record.
Maybe we'll get.
It was all happening.
Bring that mojo. Right. Anyway, sorry to derail that.
It's right. Hey.
That was shocking to me. That
so your faith is 60%. Is that what?
Yeah. If he did the Matt Williams hire, yeah, it's contingent on that move.
Cool. So yeah, the next one is a little complicated. What do you get? How do you guys? Where's your faith on Manny Machado as the captain? As the captain of the team. Where's your faith in Manny?
I mean. I'm happy to go first here. Like,
yeah.
If you were like, hey, what's your faith in Manny Machado as like a hitter? Like, I might be like, oh, I'm I don't know, like he seems to be declining and that kind of makes sense. And we might be on the hook for some bad years and huge paychecks and all that stuff. But Manny Machado is like team leader, team captain, 10 out of 10, A plus. Yes, all the way. Like
you're on fire.
I'm a big, big fan of him as the captain of this team.
I agree. I concur.
Okay. Dallas, you're on that.
Yeah. Who else is it going to be? Eric Hosmer?
No, I was just wondering because, you know, like he seems to have taken Eric Hosmer's side on this clubhouse.
Dallas, just in case you're factoring this in as a positive for Manny Machado, I don't think he was involved in hiring Matt Williams. So factor that in.
You know what, though? We don't know.
Maybe he was.
We don't know that, John. I mean, he is playing third base.
He does play third base, yeah.
I have to say, listen. There's a player on this team who always seems to be doing something in the bench, and if it's not Franmil Reyes, then it's Manny Machado. So I'm 100% have a lot of faith in that move. I like seeing him yell at Tatis. It's always fun. And maybe he'll start yelling at Hosmer now that it's official. You know what I mean?
Okay. Let's go down the line. What about Mackenzie Gore?
Eesh.
Faith in Mackenzie Gore.
10%. There's not 10%? A lot of faith there. Is he doing anything? Is he alive?
I guess he's not a Padre yet, right? So that's not.
Yeah, I mean, my hope is sky high. My faith is somewhere in that 10% range.
Why? Just because he hasn't shown it yet?
Yeah, I mean,
pretty much. Yeah, I don't know.
What has Mackenzie Gore ever done except like show up on prospect lists?
Yeah, and,
like,
exactly. Yeah,
pitch pretty well at like the single A level 3 years ago. Like that's just there's anyone who's like, oh, I have perfect faith that Mackenzie Gore is gonna whatever. Like they're just talking out of their ass. There's nothing there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about the last one we'll do is that. For probably his last season with us, Will Myers. How do you think he closes it out? Do you guys have faith in whether or not he can be something that he's already been for the last 7 years or whatever?
I'll just say I have faith that he'll throw out a good season. I feel like he goes back and forth. He was in the middle. He didn't, you know, he fell off. And I think this season he'll be able to turn it around. Honestly, it's pretty clear. Like he plays dependent on how much he enjoys the manager. Like that seems pretty obvious. Like he hated Andy Green, played terribly, you know, after he was over it, played great for Jace. And then obviously he was done listening to Jace as everyone was, played terribly. So like with Bob Melvin, I mean, you never know. I feel like he might have somebody who inspires him. I have faith he'll finish strong.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess that's the state of the faith is pretty much.
Did you want to? Did John and Travis want to have a take on Will the Thrill?
I didn't know. I thought maybe Nick was doing a little take on Will Myers here.
Oh, I don't know. I think he's. I'd rather just move on from him. I don't have a lot of faith.
I have not had any faith in Will Myers since he played third base for the Padres. I'm not saying that's his fault, but that broke Will, and he has not been the same. I have faith in his physique, in his physical body. I think it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, I love watching him hit the ball hard, which he's going to do a couple times. But no, I do not have faith in him as a complete baseball player at all.
Okay. Actually, did you go, John?
No, I can.
Where are you with that, Will? You've written about him a lot on Bandwagon Beach.
Yeah. And like, feel free if you come across any of those to just ignore them because they're all wrong. this is why, like, so Will had the best year of his career in 2020 when he only had to play 55 games. And like, that kind of makes sense because he tends to start out every season like super duper hot and then fall off, and he just never really had the chance in 2020. And then in 2019 was the season that Dallas was talking about when he was like super duper terrible. But like, if you take those two seasons out, here's his OPS plus every single year since he became a Padre. 112, 115, 109, 110, 113. Like that's the same year five times. Mm. Like that's as my buddy Craig Elson likes to say, like that's just who Craig Elson is. That's who Will Myers is. Like he got the benefit of the short season. He had one particularly bad season when like his relationship with Andy Green not only fell apart, but kind of fell apart in public.
Was that was the Fortnite year, right?
That was Twitch. The Fortnite year. Twitch. Wasn't that also the one where, like, didn't he, like, pass out at a comedy show or something?
Stoned or whatever.
Yeah.
And, can't tell you about that.
Right. But like, outside of, you know, the times where he was playing Fortnite and stoned out of his mind, like, he's just the same player every single year. And so, like, what can you expect from Will Myers this year? Like, about 20 home runs, 60 RBIs, and an OPS plus between, like, 110 and 115. Like, that makes him a slightly overpaid corner outfielder. But, like, I don't know. Like, I have faith that he'll be that guy. I don't have faith that he'll be an all-star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Faith I mean, Will being Will.
I think Will responds. I mean, obviously the numbers don't lie, but I think Will plays at his best when he's inspired to play for whatever reason. And I think that there's a good chance Bob Melvin can do that for him.
Or Matt Williams.
Or Matt Williams.
More likely Matt Williams.
Well, I love that you love Matt Williams so much. This is my favorite thing.
I love third baseman.
And San Francisco Giants.
Chris Sabo. You know, those guys, those are my kind of guys.
Don't start with Chris Sabo.
Well, the last one I was going to ask about, especially because Travis and John, you guys are both season ticket holders. Do you guys, where's your faith in the leadership of Eric Grubner, who's on the business side of the Padres, and just the whole, how this is going to be handled for season ticket holders?
You know, I as a short, bald, gray-haired, ugly man, I try to not comment on anyone's appearance. But my favorite thing going to Padre games last year, especially with Craig Elston, was when Eric Grubner would show up on the Jumbotron, because his jaw is like seven times the size of a normal jaw, and like he looks like a Marvel villain who can chomp through steel with his teeth. And so like I it's anytime you mention him, I'm like, I can't even think straight. I just imagine him like biting holes in door frames, and like, and I'm like, I don't want to get on his bad side at all, because he looks slightly terrifying.
There is a bad side, right? We can all agree there is a dark side of him.
There has to be
like a whole other life,
without a doubt. But I don't know, like he seems like he gets out of the way. Like it's, I think at this point, I was trying to figure this out the other night, and I should have looked it up, but I think like AJ Preller is officially like the president of the team at this point, in addition to being the GM. So like everyone else is just handling like business operations, and AJ's handling the baseball side, and I don't care about the business operations people. Like, great, they brought Jimmy Eat World in for a concert. Like, I don't care. I love Jimmy Eat World, but I don't like, that doesn't factor into my faith in him at all. Like, he does a good job of monetizing Petco Park. He got Garth Brooks, good for him. Like, that's an A+ right there.
That is true. I'm trying to go. As far as my opinion is the business side, I think they're doing a brilliant job, because I know a couple other season ticket holders who are a few years older than me, and none of them had any idea that MLB was on a lockout. No clue. So the baseball side for the Padres has contacted them, got them to renew their season tickets for an outrageous increase over last year, and convince them that there's a season happening that they don't really know if it's happening or not. And so all these Padres fans are blissfully, ignorantly going into a season that doesn't exist. So I have to say I have a lot of faith in the Padres business side, because they have convinced the city of San Diego that baseball is happening when we have no actual evidence that it is.
Wait. I can bring this full circle. It's not the job of Eric Grubner to make sure that everyone knows what's going on with the baseball lockout. It's
right.
The job of
to sell tickets.
No, it's the job of the Union Tribune Sports section to roll out these dinosaurs to smoke cigarettes and talk about the Los Angeles Chargers. Like, I don't care.
Beautiful.
Wow, that was great. Yeah, Canepa's destroying faith. I think that's
what I learned on this podcast. What's your faith in Nick Canepa?
Yeah. Well, that was the 2022 State of the Faith. A great segment that I thought of in the shower. But we're gonna. Hey, John, thanks for coming on again. You know, it's been too long. That I'll never forget the night on Tom Hanks Day. We were scheduled to record with you at Voice of San Diego, and the Voice of San Diego actual podcast asked us to not come down because their live pod was canceled and they had to do it in the studio. So we never got to record. And then the world fell apart. And We're back.
Yeah. We're back.
I do miss being in a room with you guys. It's a little bit, it's even more fun than this.
It is.
Yeah.
Rudy Gobert hadn't gotten all those people sick. We would have had a made up pod. Oh, man. All right. Well, hey, Dallas, let's plug the album one more time.
Hell yeah, let's do it. January 28th, about a week away. It'll be out all streaming platforms. It's called Rough Drafts, Stories to Drink to, collection of stories, different than anything I've done before and you probably heard me do before, except I think you guys have all heard me tell stories. So, but yeah, it'll be fun. Go out and get it. I don't know how much it'll be off the top of my head. I think it'll be like $75.
Steal. I was thinking 90.
I mean, what's the price per word there has got to be real low.
I know. My stories are all haikus. They're all haikus. It'll be like $8 or something. But anyway, get it. I would appreciate it. It'd be awesome.
Cool. Maybe we'll get an exclusive excerpt or a track on the at the end of a podcast or something.
Yeah, probably not. But yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, you can also check out sometimes he does Bandwagon Beach, but he mostly does the Padres Hot Tub. check them out. They're one of the last ones still doing it, like us. For some reason,
we were the first and the last. You guys were the first. We were like the second, and now we're the last two standing, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why are we doing it?
Tradition.
At this point, yeah, it's obligation. We just have to do it.
It's for our sweet, sweet patrons who continue to show support, and we always do appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll probably talk to you in February or something. I don't know what's going on.
When the news breaks, we'll be here.
Cool. All right. Well, keep the faith, whatever that means. All right. Goodbye.